Today on First Lady and Friends, we had a return guest, Curtis Bennett, a dear friend, who is now the executive director of One Kind Act a Day through the Simnani Family Foundation. We had a great conversation about what it means to be kind, how kindness helps us, the science behind kindness. It was a great day. I hope you get involved in kindness and be kind and do One Kind Act a Day. Can't wait for you to take a listen. Let's get proximate. Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. Today we have a return guest. We're so happy to have Curtis Bennett back. You're back, but you're in a different role. So let's talk about that. You are now, we kind of teased this when you were on before because we knew you were leaving and making that switch, but we weren't ready to make the announcement yet.
No, we weren't just quite ready to do that. But now I am pleased to be able to say that I am the executive director to One Kind Act a Day. It is a function of the Simnani Family Foundation, and it's a marvelous organization, and I feel privileged to be a part of this.
Yeah, and it's that's why we're so excited to have you back, because we wanted to talk through this. First of all, let's start. I've known about this for a long time, since its beginning.
2002.
Okay.
22.
Sorry. I was going to say it was just a year or so ago when this all kicked off.
Right.
So let's talk about, first of all, what it is. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, you know, but also what it is and where it came from. What was the impetus for starting One Kind Act today?
That's a great place to start. So in 2022, at the height of just all of the challenges that we were dealing with, the weaponization of COVID, the weaponization of politics. We had people looting streets, and there was a lot of contempt and anger and turning over police cars and lighting them on fire. Khosrow Simnani, who is a local businessman here in Salt Lake City, woke up one morning for all intents and purposes and said, we really need to do something about this. And he came up with this whole concept of what would happen if we could convince people across our community, across the country, across the world to deliberately perform one single act of kindness a day. That's it. And imagine the power that would have, the butterfly effect that would have. And so because he is the businessman he is, and because he's a man of action, he decided, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this happen. And so he formed the foundation, talked to good people here in the community who bought into it quickly, including the governor, who was quick to say, I'm in, I want to support this. And others like Zions Bank and the University of Utah and other learning institutions that were very quick to say, this is something that we absolutely need. And so in April of 2022, he started this foundation. What's really interesting, and at least I find it interesting, is on that particular day at that particular press conference that they held at the Gallivan Center, a dear friend of mine asked me to go with him to a press conference, and he thought I might find it interesting. And so as I sat there and listened to Mr. Simnani speak and the governor speak and Scott Anderson speak and a doctor speak and all these people talk about, you know, kindness and how important it is and how powerful it is, I thought to myself, this is cool. I could really do this. I wouldn't even mind working for this guy. And then I forgot all about it. And then a year later, Mr. Simnani approached me and said, hey, I've done some research on you and wonder if you'd be interested in helping to run this organization. Mm. So it's interesting how it came full circle.
Full circle, yeah. And it is interesting. We call it STP, same 10 people.
Oh, yeah.
You end up just sort of... The same 10 people end up doing all it's the 10 busiest people in your community that do all the things. Mm-hmm. They're the leaders in your community. They're the leaders in the PTA. They're the leaders in your faith organizations. And it ends up being these same 10 people that end up kind of coming around and coming together and doing just wonderful things. So I love that. I love that you're part of that STP, the same 10 people that
well, that's
that
a
are
privilege
doing
to be
the good
considered
things
in that way. So thank you very much. Thank you.
No, I love it. So that's how it got started. Where is it now? What's happening with the organization right now? What are you working on?
So we have this incredible surge of activity going on right now. And we've identified a number of areas that we want to focus our attention on. The first one I would say is the political arena. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who think that when we talk about kindness in the political arena, it's a fool's errand and that the narrative has gone too far and there's no way that we can rescue it. There's no way we can bring it back. And the contempt is too high and the anger is too challenging and the disrespect for one another. And so we disagree. You disagree. The Disagree Better initiative is something that we support fully. And so we disagree with that whole concept. We focus an awful lot of attention on education. And so when we talk about this, we say that if there is one area that we find the greatest amount of satisfaction, if there's one area where we have more fun, it's with the educational component. Because when we see these little kids, they get so involved and they're so uninhibited in their efforts to be kind to one another. It is just inspiring and it's a lot of fun and it's heartwarming. And then we decide that if we can reduce bullying almost from night to day with a kindness initiative at a school, then that's worth it right then and there. And so one of the things that we're trying to do is we're not trying to teach kids how to not be mean. We're trying to teach kids how to be kind. And that's what we're really, that's one of our objectives where the educational component is concerned. We're working with a lot of businesses too. And so there's the business arena. And we have businesses that have taken on the kindness initiative and they want to adopt kindness as part of their culture. They want it to be part of their message. They want to be able to speak that to their employees. They want to be able to speak it to their clients and even to their vendors. Instead of having a confrontational relationship with the vendor, they want to be situated in such a way that they can have a kind relationship with their vendors. There's the religious component as well. Unfortunately, we're seeing an awful lot of this today, there's just the horrors of religious ideologies that clash at times. So we get involved with a lot of different religious organizations so that we can amplify the message of kindness among all of the common natural core of religious thinking where kindness is concerned. And then last but not least, certainly not least, is the whole idea that we want all of our efforts, all of our work, everything that we do to permeate to the home, whether that's the way I see a home or the way you see the home, whether it's a one-person home or it's got many people in the home. We're really not concerned with that. But what we really want is we want people to take these actionable things that they're learning in all of these arenas and take them into their homes and make their home environment a better place.
Mm. Yeah, it was so powerful. And I'm wondering, you know, with Disagree Better, we get pushback and we get the same thing that you're getting a little bit, is that sort of defeatist attitude of, well, it's too late. It's not going to work. What are you doing? You know, it doesn't, you know, it's soft. It's not standing up. It's, you know, blah, blah, blah. We hear all that. And when it was interesting, we were in a meeting with when we were about to kick Disagree Better off, we did local media, and you know the question was, you know, how is this going to work? You know, it's fluff. It's, you know, you're not doing things like that. And it was interesting, and we gave all the answers why we think it's going to work. But in the end, I finally just said to him too. I said, "Well, what we're doing isn't working. So, what do we have to lose?"
Exactly.
And that's kind of where I'm at. But exactly. Talk a little bit maybe about what other pushback you're getting, you know, besides maybe that defeatist attitude. What other maybe pushback are you getting and how are you overcoming that?
Unfortunately, when we sit in a lot of conversations, people throw their hands up almost in despair because they feel like, what can I do about this? What kind of an impact can I simply have on all of the challenges or the chaos or the contempt and things that exist in the world today or even in our community? So what can I do about it? And the fact of the matter is we can all do something about it. And so one of the adages that I've always appreciated is the thought, well, how many seeds are there in an apple versus how many apples are there in a seed? And so it's incalculable the number of apples that are in a seed. And our job, Robert Louis Stevenson made a statement one. He says, never worry about the harvest, worry about planting the seeds. And so if what we can do is we can plant those seeds of kindness, then hopefully they'll germinate and they'll take off and then they'll grow. And then the ripple effect and the butterfly effect and all of the things that we talk about is absolutely true where acts of kindness are concerned. It's impossible to calculate what one kind act will do as it reverberates and ripples and moves on from one person to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. Who knows what at the end of the day it will have accomplished. And the last thing that I would say about that is we just feel like if we don't do something to plant the seed, okay, then we're not doing anything at all. And it's interesting, kindness is a very resilient seed. I did a little research on seeds, and olive trees are very resilient. You can plant an olive seed and you can almost drown it. You can burn it. You can put it through a drought. You can do almost anything, and it's going to germinate, and it's going to grow. And even you can even cut back the tree, and it'll figure out a way to come back. And so kindness is a lot like that.
Yeah, no, it's clearly something we have to do. So my message is like you can't keep going down this road, like you said, throwing up your hands and saying we can't do anything. I think collectively we have to start. We have to start somewhere. We have to start doing this.
And maybe if we can get beyond the same 10 people, like as you recommended, if we can get to the same 20 people or same 30 people, it's still STP. Yep. And but maybe we can get a few more people to be convinced with the idea that maybe if I do something, maybe if I just venture out, let's see what happens. And so what we're really trying to do is we're trying to build this ever-growing community of kindness that we think people are actually starving for. They really want to be a part of. We just need to get them engaged.
Yeah. And you know, model. I think so. And I love what you're doing with the students, especially those youngest students, and I think all students. But, you know, I talk about this a lot, the despair I felt during, you know, our election and during that 2020 time when what I saw disheartened me so much that I saw political and you know, people out in the public arena and in social media and things like that modeling behavior as adults, modeling behavior that was so inhuman and just not what I would want my children to see and to be a part of and to reflect back and to learn. And to me, it was just, it's so disheartening. I love that we all can be a part of the solution.
I really love going to Little League games and watching the kids play. I don't like watching the parents in the stands. Right. I like to go to high school football games and I like to watch the students play, but I'm not exactly wild about watching the parents in the stands. But it's interesting what happens. Again, we go back to these kids and their uninhibited feelings towards this whole thing. One of the things that I'm learning throughout this whole process, and it's really been fascinating to me, is that the research isn't just good on kindness. It's overwhelming on kindness and how overwhelmingly good it is for our human organism. We're happier, we're healthier, we feel less anxiety, we feel less depression, we have less hypertension. There are studies out there that show that people are more attractive when they're kinder. And so the benefits to the human organism are significant. And so I wonder what happens to us when we default to anger, mm-hmm. when our human organism wants really to default to kindness. Somebody said, I was talking to a social psychologist the other day, and somebody said, made the comment, it's become second nature to me. He says, no, it's not your second nature. It's your first nature. Mm. Your second nature is to choose to be angry and choose to be upset. And then you default to anger and contempt. Your first nature, because it's the nature of the human being, is to be kind. Mm. So when we say it's becoming second nature to me, it's always been your first nature.
Mm. I love that thought. Mm-hmm. I want to get into more. You mentioned the science mm-hmm. behind kindness, and I want to dive a little bit more into that when we come right back. We're back here with Curtis Bennett, the executive director of One Kind Act, today with the Simnani Foundation, Family Foundation. You mentioned what kindness does for us as humans. There's a lot of science. One of the pushbacks that we got again with what we're doing with Disagree Better was, you know, how do you measure this? How do you really see its effect? And then, you know, the other thing is, well, it's just fluff. This is just, you know, fluff on top, and it's not real hard policy, and it's not, you know, all the things that we've heard in the pushback, which we understand, and we get where that's coming from. But what we've been able to see is there is real science behind the effects, the psychological effects, the behavioral effects, the physical effects of contempt, of the hate, mm-hmm. the anger,
right.
Those things that, those negative emotions, those negative thoughts, there is a science to this.
Absolutely.
And so I would love to dive a little bit more into the science, the things that you're seeing, the things that are driving what you're doing with One Kind Act today.
So as I said, the science isn't just good, or the research isn't just good, it's overwhelming. And as you read, and the more I read on this, and I'm not a doctor, but when I read and I start to understand the true value of kindness to us as individuals, it just is astounding to me that we don't adopt the whole concept a little bit better from a standpoint of just physical well-being, but community well-being or corporate well-being or educational well-being. We were talking about this in the office the other day. When was the last time you ever heard somebody come out of a doctor's appointment and say, so my doctor says I have high blood pressure, and he says that there are some things that I need to change. The doctor will say, you need to lose a little weight. You got to cut out some salt in your life. You probably got to give up some caffeine, and here's a medication that we're going to give you. And then that's where it stops. But the fact of the matter is, the research shows that if an individual will be deliberate in their kindness, and it's not just simply writing out a check and having no engagement with anyone at any time, it's actually being face-to-face. And it can be something as simple as opening a door, smiling at an individual, giving a kind remark, writing a thank you note, telling your waiter that they did a great job. All of these kindnesses have, in many respects, as much impact as the medication will have. So why doesn't the doctor say, and in addition to what we want you to do with this medication, we want you to be deliberate and perform a single act of kindness or work on being kinder? I've never heard that. And so,
yeah, maybe either.
So not only is it just in the medical field, but in the political field, we stop short of this idea thinking it's not going to have any real impact, mm-hmm. when the fact of the matter is it's going to have a significant impact. The first thing that it causes where the science is concerned is what they call the helper's high, kind of like the runner's high. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a runner, and I don't know that I've experienced a runner's high as much as some people will say that they do.
I don't know that I ever have.
I think you have to hit 10 miles first, which is why it's never happened with me. But
I've hit 10 miles, and I still pretty much sucks. But I feel great when I'm done. That's the point. So I feel great when I'm done.
And we'll talk about that because—
when I stop running.
There's this helper's high that happens when somebody is actually engaged in helping other individuals. And again, it can be very simple, but it could be formal. It could be going to the soup kitchen and helping people who are homeless to receive food on that particular day. And there's a helper's high that happens almost instantly. And if you were to stop the individual and ask them the question, how do you feel right now? They would say, I feel really good. Okay. Well, when you walked in, you said you were a little tired, and you said that maybe you were feeling a little depressed or you're a little overworked. Do you feel that way right now? And they'll say, no, actually, no. And the statistics are that they'll have forgotten a lot of those things that may have been bringing them down because they're getting that helper's high. But then they talk about something that's called a calm that occurs afterwards. And this calm is what reduces the blood pressure. It's what opens the arteries. It's what helps us to feel more relaxed. It's what helps us to sleep a little bit better. And it's interesting, not only is the helper's high something that can be recalled even weeks after the event happened, but so is the calm that happens afterwards. And so when somebody is reminded, do you remember what you did the other day over at the soup kitchen? Yeah, I remember that. How did that make you feel? And then suddenly the calm starts to come in again and they start to feel that. And so that's what happens to the body, whether the person is actually cognizant as to what is occurring to them or not. It's occurring in the body, and it's so helpful to the body. When we're pent up and we're angry and we're frustrated all the time, or we want to throw our shoe at the TV because of the news, versus we feel a little relaxed, we've got that helper's high going, it's no wonder that our body responds so beautifully to those feelings, and so positively to those feelings. And the research can go, what's really interesting is the research is as old as the 1700s. Mm. And yet, there are too many of us, and there are too many fields that are defaulting to medication when I'm not saying it's not needed. It is needed in so many cases, but if we can couple it with this kindness, then the effects are even far, can reach further.
You know, it's so interesting that I find myself, because I sort of am in this sort of service world, mm-hmm. and right. giving world, and I meet with nonprofits, I interact with humans and people working hard in this space, and so I kind of you take it a little bit for granted, because mm-hmm. you kind of do feel that quite often, I think, to the point where when I get on social media, and I really try to honestly curate a lot of my social media. So it's, I was talking to a friend who said, you know, I can't believe, you know, there's so much stuff on social media or on Instagram that I just, it's so negative. And I thought, huh, how do you must not be curating it the way, if it's not funny or uplifting, I usually don't, mm-hmm. It's usually not part of my feed, because mm-hmm. yeah. I've curated yeah. it in such a way that if it's not happy and wonderful, then I probably am not paying attention to it.
Exactly.
But every time I do see that negative, and I, you know, of course I see it, and I always wonder to myself, who has time for that? Like, exactly. That is so, why? I guess I'm always flabbergasted, like, who wants to be that angry all the time? Who wants to be that upset and just... I don't know. I like it. It always amazes me. Like, I don't know. I guess having sort of waded through this world of the opposite of seeing great things and seeing great people and connecting with humans that exactly. are different than me. It's just it is a bit of an addiction. I mean, a good addiction of goodness and seeing goodness all around you. And then when you see that negative, you think, man, who has time for that?
And I would wager, because of the experience that you've had time and time and time again, if I ask you to share with me a heartwarming experience that you've had, it wouldn't take you very long at all to be able to come up with that example, or multiple examples, or 1,000 examples of these heartwarming experiences that you've had. And I think there's a reason why we call it heartwarming, because it does warm the heart, and it does cause us to relax a little bit, and it does cause us to not get involved in the chaos when the chaos is surrounding us. And I agree with you. We all know somebody who seems to be happiest when they're upset. Mm-hmm. And it's just, but they're not. They're not happy. And they're doing themselves an awful lot of harm through the process. I read one book, and one of the books says, I agree with the whole concept that there is a horrible global warming that's going on in the world. But there's also global cooling that's going on in the world. And the cooling is between individuals. We're cooling off with one another. Our emotions towards one another are cooling off. And we're not as impacted when people are hurting. We're not as impacted when people are in need. We're not as impacted as when it's clear that there is something that needs to be done, and our hearts are cooling towards that whole concept. And he says, I believe that our global cooling is as dangerous, if not more so, than the global warming that's going on in the world today.
Mm. Yeah, that's powerful. Mm-hmm. And you see it all around you, and you wonder how we've got to do something about it. It's a powerful tool. I want to talk about how we can get involved. What can we do? What can everyday people do to get involved with One Kind Act Today, to get involved in whatever, you know, whatever you're doing, how do we come aboard?
So One Kind Act Today, by inherently in its name, is suggesting what can we do. Yeah. Okay, it's a single act of kindness every day, at least something deliberate. One of the things that I found, and this is miraculous as far as my wife is concerned, I put one of our One Kind Act Today stickers on the back window of my car. Okay, I'm a different driver.
Mm.
I let people in, and I'm not so pent up. Because my wife says, don't forget you've got that sticker on the back of your window there, so you got to be nice on the road. And so it's actually changed my behavior with my driving. I oftentimes say I learned how to drive in Mexico, and in Mexico you have to be aggressive. But now with this little sticker on the back of my window, it changed my behavior a little bit. So inherently in the word, in the title, we're already telling everyone what it is that they can do. Now, specifically, we'd love for people to go to our website, thepowerofkind.org. So, and then there's an opportunity there to take a pledge to engage in the whole concept of kindness on a day in, day out basis. And part of the reason why we're doing that is it gives us an opportunity to be able to send individuals prompts. And twice a week, we send out these prompts on what you can do to be kind, including some ideas on things that you could do, and they're specific. And so what we get in terms of feedback from individuals who join us in that particular way, they're grateful that, one, they got the prompt, and two, we gave them something specific that they could do that they can engage in and hopefully improve their practice so that it can be part of their first nature, that they'll start doing it without thinking. What we're trying to do is we're trying to build what we call a community of kindness. And we want people to feel like you're part of this community and you reside in this community. And so inspiring people on kindness, it's not a hard sell. Yeah. Motivating people that they need to be kind, it's not a hard sell either. But keeping people engaged and helping them to remember that it's something that I really need to do, and it's a muscle that I need to continue to exercise until ultimately it becomes incredibly easy for us. And so what we try to do is we try to give those prompts, we try to give those tools, we try to give those resources that people can access in order to be able to develop that kindness muscle, so to speak. We also have on our website books for children that are good reads. And there's some really, really good books out there. I'm actually impressed by all the books that we've read for kids and we're starting to recommend, and we've done reviews on, that people can access that are really, really, really good. But there are articles, there are videos, there are other books that people can read. One of the best books I read so far is The 5 Benefits of Kindness. It was really quite good. And the studies, it was just replete with all of the different studies on why kindness is good for us as individuals. So our job is to inspire and motivate and engage. Mm,
I love it. Okay, I want to talk a little bit. You mentioned a little bit about coming together, building community around this. I want to talk a little bit about belonging when we come right back.
Perfect.
Welcome back. Again, we're here with Curtis Bennett, Executive Director of One Kind Act a Day with the Simnani Family Foundation. And I've been thinking a lot about belonging. And when it gets frustrating, when I see sort of this tribalism, this polarization, and again, it always baffles me why that's fun.
Yeah.
Why, you know, for me, it's like, ain't nobody got time for that. Like, yeah. I don't know how much, I look at people that spend a lot of energy in the hate, the contempt, all this stuff, and I think, boy, I wished I felt that passionate about anything. Yeah. That I would go get, you know, fired up and scream at somebody and say horrible things. And I, you know, as I've thought about this, trying to think about why would somebody spend that much of that energy, that negative energy, in something like that? And the more I think about it, I believe, and I may be wrong because I'm okay to be wrong.
Okay.
I believe it comes down to belonging. I believe that our human need to belong is so powerful that we will find it in hate if we can't find it in love. Do you believe that?
I agree. And I really do agree. And it's what's unfortunate. So first of all, loneliness is at an all-time high, right? And seclusion is at an all-time high. And marginalization is at an all-time high. And bullying is, you know, a big challenge in schools. And inherent in bullying is just the whole idea of not feeling included and being excluded and all those different types of things. But what I find really interesting is that in that rhetoric of hate, because they belong to a group that approaches it in that particular way, if they were to decide at some point in time, you know what, I don't believe this anymore, then they're going to be subjected to that same hate. Mm-hmm. And you got to ask yourself, where's the right and wrong in that? I mean, there's just something really wrong there. And that's unfortunate. But there's just kindness from a standpoint of inclusion isn't going to worry too much about religious ideologies. It's not going to worry too much about socioeconomic circumstance. It's not going to worry too much about your political thoughts versus my political thoughts. And I could go on and on about all of the things that seem to divide us or make us feel unincluded or marginalized. But kindness is just not a part of that. And so it's like I said with families. I may see a family my way, and if you see it your way, if I'm going to be good to you and if I'm going to be kind, then I'm going to do everything I can to help you be able to develop it the way you see it and give you the right to be able to do so. And I'm not going to be angry about it. Let's just work with one another and be good. And it's just really unfortunate. So I do agree with you, but these things ought not be so.
You know, and I think people need to be given permission to love again. Mm-hmm. I think to care again. Mm-hmm. I think they need permission to find a place of belonging that is kind, that is inclusive. And I think that's where this comes in. I think giving people a community that says, we care about each other. Mm-hmm. We are going to help each other no matter what you look like, no matter what religious background you come from, no matter what your story is, no matter what political ideology you have that may be vastly different from mine.
Absolutely.
Kindness breaks through all those barriers and I can find belonging. I love the idea of a community, a community of caring, a community of kindness, a community that builds people up instead of tears people down. I think most people, I believe, and honestly, the data bears this out. Most people are hungry for that.
And if you don't mind, I would say starving.
Yes.
Yeah. And they really are starving for this. And this community of kindness does not suggest that we all have to agree on everything. This community of kindness doesn't mean that we're all going to look the same. This community of kindness doesn't suggest, even in the most remotest way, that I'm going to ask you to think the way that I think. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. I want to give people the space respectfully and kindly to think the way that they want to. All I ask is that they do the same in return. What's really interesting when you say venturing out, when a person is felt marginalized or isolated, it's really hard for them to venture out and suggest that, and it becomes a safe place for them to exclude themselves even and to suggest, I'm not going to venture out this way. It takes an immense amount of courage. And at the same time, it takes an immense amount of courage to be kind when you're being disrespected. Mm-hmm. It takes an immense amount of courage when you're being dealt with contempt to be kind. And that amount of courage, I believe that one of the greatest and most underappreciated and undervalued concept where kindness is concerned is courage. Mm. It takes an immense amount of courage to be kind.
It's so much harder.
Yes.
To return kindness when you've been receiving contempt or anger. That may be part of our human nature to, at least it is for mine, I feel like, I don't know if it's my first nature. I hope it's not. But that, you know, when I think it's literally goes back to our brain chemistry of when mm-hmm. we feel like we're being attacked, we have to attack. Mm-hmm. And so it really is kind of thwarting that sort of caveman instinct to fight back. I think it's tough. I mean, we're not here saying like kindness is so easy, especially when we're getting negative towards us.
I see there's a big difference between being nice and being kind. Mm. So my grandfather used to tell me all the time, do you want me to be nice to you or do you want me to tell you the truth? Well, no, I want you to tell you the truth. Well, that might not be nice. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to be kind to individuals and tell them what they really need to hear at a particular time. And that's a kinder thing to do in a work environment. You're better off telling an employee that you're struggling right now and you're going to really need to have to buckle down versus telling them everything's all right right up until the day that they're let go and fired. That's one of the meanest things that you could actually do. I used to tell my employees, I'll never blindside you if you don't blindside me. You're always going to know where you're at. And I feel that's the kindest way to go about that. The same is true with Tim Shriver said that kindness doesn't get clicks. Mm-hmm. And what sells are clicks. And maybe we're not seeing the clicks with disagree better that we want to see. But I think if we stick with it, then at the end of the day, we're going to start seeing the resurgence of that kind of a narrative where people will say, well, wait a minute, this is stuck around. And it looks like maybe I can venture out. Maybe I can get involved in this. And maybe there is a safe place here.
Yeah. So I learned, we learned this phrase, which I have thought so much about as we've been delving into this space. There's a speaker at a conference that we were at that called it conflict entrepreneurs. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to understand the playing field out there. And the playing field is that there are many folks in the media, in the political arena, who are conflict entrepreneurs, meaning they literally make money mm-hmm. off your anger, mm-hmm. your contempt, your clicks right. from, because that actually, it is a little bit like a drug. It's a lot like a drug mm-hmm. where it actually affects your brain chemistry and you actually get dopamine hits from seeing something that is contemptuous on your side or that's, you know, whatever that looks like. It actually does affect your brain chemistry in a really negative way, but it is that hit, that chemical hit that people start to crave. But we have to understand, just like opioids and just like, you know, tobacco and cigarettes and the tobacco companies, there are people making money, a lot of money, off your their ability to get you to have contempt. Mm-hmm. And I think when we realize that and we understand the dynamic, and that we're being manipulated, our brains are being manipulated, our children's brains are being manipulated on social media and in the media and cable news. When you sit there and you know, I've seen this with my own parents and people that are close to me where they, you know, got sucked in a little bit on some of those conflict entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And it really did change their personality for a short time. And once we get out, I mean, I myself, I watched cable news, you know, when my kids were little, I had it on in the background and I was watching it and it was just always there. And I became a different person. I became more angry. I became more intolerant of different points of view. Mm-hmm. And once I backed out of there, once I got there, and again, people that I'm very close to have done the same thing and backed out, all of a sudden, it's like you put on new glasses and you see, oh, actually the world's not so bad. Mm-hmm. But it was that dopamine hit that you're getting that's telling you, you got to be angry, you got to, you know, you got to have outrage and you got to you know, get all your anger all ginned up. And anyway, so for me, it's understanding the landscape of you know, the incentive structure out there.
So again, Tim Shriver says that one of the best ways to cure contempt is to call it out. Mm-hmm. And what you're talking about is calling it out. And the dopamine can be offset by the oxytocin that occurs mm-hmm. when a person is kind. And it's actually a more powerful drug for the human body. And so maybe instead of us having conflict entrepreneurs, we have kindness entrepreneurs.
Mm,
instead of
that.
It being the same 10 people, maybe you and I can help change it into the same trillion people. And we can get people to really, you know, adopt the whole concept. I don't think we're too far gone. I don't think it's a lost cause. I'm grateful for Cosgrove Simnani and the Simnani Family Foundation and their willingness to, you know, put this kind of effort and finances into it.
Yeah.
And to make it part of our narrative again. I have great confidence that with people like you and the initiatives that you've got going on and others in your team and others that we're going to be able to make this happen.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm really excited for it. I think, like you said, people are ready for it. Mm-hmm. I think there is a large, we'll call an exhausted majority of folks. I see it all the time. I see kindness towards me and my family mm-hmm. daily.
Right.
You know, I have people saying, don't worry about the haters. Don't worry. I don't look at it. So I don't know. You're the one telling me about it. But I have people, you know, day in and day out, you're, you know, being kind to me. So, it's so much easier
yeah.
to then turn around and be, like I said, it does grow. It, you do have that butterfly effect. You do have that, oxytocin and, right. and it does feel good to spread kindness. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and I don't know if I should mention it this way, but maybe we ought to listen to the great modern day philosopher Taylor Swift and just shake it off.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I'm a fan.
Person of the year, yeah, right?
Right, right?
Yeah,
very impressive.
And very well deserved. Yeah. I think she seems amazing. So
yeah.
and you know, kindness is contagious, and so I appreciate what you're doing. We're all in, and I think
I think
Utah will remain, you know, a leader in this space of goodness, of kindness, of service, of volunteering. We've caught the vision, I think, here in Utah better than anywhere else. So let's keep it going. Thank you.
My pleasure. Our goal is to make Utah the kindest capital of the world. So
let's do it together.
I agree.
Thanks.
Thank you.
To get involved and find more information, go to powerofkind.org. Thanks for being a friend.